It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Now, welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we're going to have a conversation about important issues that affect your life. Thrilled to have in studio with me my friend, my sponsorship partner, and that is Jason McBride. You and your team over at Presidential Wealth Management are valued sponsors. It's because of you and others is why we're on the air, and it's just great to have you here.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here, Kim.
You know, we had a big day yesterday. It was the Stanford, Colorado rally, and then last night, about 30 women at my house. And so I was scrambling to get in here. I called Steve. I said, hey, I think I'll let just you and Jason take the show. He said, get in here. Ha! So good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Can I go on record here?
Yes. It depends. What are you going to say?
Jason and I have something really great worked out here. Stand by. No, to thank you and to congratulate you on this event yesterday. It was just an awesome thing to stand there and watch it unfold. I felt empowered. I felt certainly I was with a lot of like-minded people, and I emphasize a lot because the numbers were very impressive. Not that we did it for numbers or not that you did it for numbers, but still, it was great to see such a good crowd. Obviously, as you said, the weather was, I kept on taking my jacket off, then I put it back on, then I take it off. So the weather was great.
Yes, the weather committee did a fantastic job, which we thank you to the good Lord on that. And when you say like-minded people, Steve, what's interesting is there's really were people across the political spectrum there. The like-mindedness on this was that people prefer freedom instead of force. And that is what has brought us together across a wide spectrum of issues. And the women who spoke, it was pretty amazing, wasn't it, Steve? It looks like you've got a call coming in, so I'll continue on while you're doing that. We've got a great show planned for you. Jason, it's so great to have you here.
Well, it's always great to be here, Kim, and I'm always shocked that you have me back.
Always have you back.
Glutton and for punishment.
Now, you bring such great nuggets of wisdom. And, you know, normally you call in around 6:27 every morning, and you share nuggets of wisdom. You spend a lot of time in preparation for those few minutes. And so we're going to go through a couple of things in the third and fourth segment with you. And that is one of the things is that regarding the trading year, you know, as we get into the year. And then the other thing is I had sent this, I'd seen this piece as I was going through the internet last week. And it was a piece by, I think, CNBC. And they have six charts that they're comparing the U.S. and China economies. And it looked to me like they were trying to make China out to look a lot better than the United States. So I thought that would be a good conversation to have with you. And so you've really delved into this piece.
Yeah, it should be a fun conversation about the actual economies and also about the type of bias that you tend to see in almost every article that comes out these days.
Well, I am so excited that you dissected this. So we're going to go through that. Steve is waving his hand. What do you need, Mr. Steve?
Ms. Natalie Menton is here, and she just wanted to make a comment on yesterday's event. And I figured this is important. We need to do this. So, Natalie.
Good morning, Natalie. And you spoke yesterday regarding protecting Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. And you really got the crowd revved up. And so welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to share my appreciation for all the effort that went into Stand for Colorado Freedom versus Force. And we're obviously on the freedom side. And just thank you so much for what was really a well-attended an excellent rally, Kim. You did a great job.
Well, and Natalie, it wasn't just me. There was really a team of people that worked on this, and it did come together beautifully. And you were one of our speakers, Women of the West. And I was just really impressed with our speakers. And again, they're from a variety of political ideologies. However, the thing that has brought us together, our intersectionality, if you will, Natalie, is freedom. And all these folks prefer freedom instead of force. And it was just it was an amazing day. It was kind of magical.
Yes, it was. And just the one note, I did finally go in and donate, because I know those things cost money, but the message is so important that I did go to standforcolorado.com this morning and kicked in my share. So wanted to maybe motivate some others who were interested, because it takes money, and we need to continue to stand up for freedom, and freedom isn't free. So I just wanted to share that also. So thank you, and that's all I wanted to tell you this morning before I head out for the day.
Okay, well, Natalie Minton, thank you so much, and really appreciate that. Yes, this was very organic, and it does take money. We really invested in the sound system, and Steve, you could see that. It was, I think, a very impressive sound system. But when people can hear, people can engage, and the crowd was very engaged.
Yeah, it's obviously an outdoor venue, and outdoor sound is tricky anyway, even when you don't have Lincoln Street right in front of you, sirens, you name it. There was no end of the parade of traffic. But at any rate, you've said it twice now, and I would jump in on this. Taking a look at the 2019 results of the legislature, every one of the big major issues that came out of there was an assault on basic freedoms. And again, it was just genius, and I'm not trying to blow hot air at you, but genius to take every one of those and say, and kind of refute it and say, no, this is where we need to be.
Yeah, so it was a great day, and thank you to each of you who were there. And actually, we are not a nonprofit, and nonprofit doesn't mean that people don't make money. It just means they don't have to pay taxes. But the reason that we don't do that is because we do not want to have any constraints on our freedom of speech. And so when you go to Stanford, Colorado to make a contribution, it's a contribution. And actually, a number of people came up and handed me cash and checks yesterday, which I really appreciated, because I committed personally to make sure that we did everything that we could on our end to make this a success. And so thank you to all of you. Thank you to Natalie Minton. And you can go to StanfordColorado.com and contribute, or you can go to KimMunson.com. That's MONSON.com, and you can contribute. In the second segment, we will be talking with Colorado Representative Dave Williams. And this is really important, because I got a text message from Susan Kochevar. And she said that the rally was great. It was a good-sized crowd. Jason, 148 bills were read across the desk yesterday, and the cost is at least approximately $5,000 each. She says, here we go. So fasten your seatbelts. So they have obviously been working all summer on how they can go after our freedoms.
Well, that's a lot of legislation.
I'm not sure we need any more laws.
Well, I'm not sure we do either.
Yeah. I think we should start to repeal laws instead of trying to make more laws. But that is why we did Stand for Colorado yesterday. And thank you to all of our fabulous speakers, all of the volunteers. The moms regarding medical freedom were really, really involved in this. And so thank you to all of you. And as we look at these issues, it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. You can vote yourself into socialism, but it's pretty darn tough to get out of it. And that is actually Hitler and the Nazis. That stands for National Socialist German Workers' Party. Hitler was elected, but man, to get rid of him, it took a lot. And so that is why we are engaged every morning here, Monday through Friday, on the battle of ideas. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights. And I'm talking to the legislature down there today. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property or freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, but with policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to implement that. Always, I want to say thank you to the team, to Steve and Zach and Patty and Keith and Charlie, all of you, just the support that, that you bring to the table. If we need to do something, you're like, I'll get it done, and it gets done. And I so appreciate you, Producer Steve, and the team. And so, and also our listeners out there, I appreciate you also. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, soul, mind, and body. And I do appreciate you listening. Inspiration for today, I found this from a book by a guy named Don Pasco. And Steve, I think you alluded to the weather yesterday. I mean, January 8th, there's a lot of risk when you decide to plan a rally on January 8th in Denver, Colorado. You never know what the weather's going to be like. You just don't know. There's a lot of moving parts. And as I was reflecting last night and this morning, I just was grateful. And this is what Don Pasco said. He says, you cannot go through the day negative and depressed as long as you have a spirit of thanksgiving in your heart. And I'm very grateful for everybody, for everything to make yesterday a big success.
Yeah, I think it was Rick Turnquest and I were talking and just mentioned the weather. And the very first time we brought up Stanford, Colorado, I think it was probably the first week of December, saying, yeah, you know, put this on your radar. We're going to do this. And everybody's walking around thinking, what could the weather possibly do to us in January?
So we lucked out, that's for sure.
We nailed it.
We did. And so let's have a little levity here, our funnies. There is a story about an elderly man who had a serious hearing problem.
Wait, I thought this was out of, I thought you got this from Jason McBride's wife.
Well, maybe I did. Yeah, Melissa.
It.
Melissa did. She called and told me this story.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She said there's a story about, well, this said elderly man. Jason's not elderly. So there's a story about a young man who had a serious hearing problem for many years. He could hardly hear anything. So one day he went to the doctor and he was fitted with a new type of hearing aid to where he could hear 100%. A month later, he went back for a checkup and the doctor said, your family must be happy. Your hearing is perfect. He says, I haven't told my family. Ha ha. Okay, we're going to go to break here in just a moment. Before we do that, a couple of things. And this event, I think, has been somewhat overshadowed by all the focus that we've had on Stanford, Colorado. But a really fun, really important event on Monday night is we're starting our salon series. And Helen Raleigh, you know her. She's a columnist with the Federalist. She's an author. And she and Dr. Paul Prentice have put together a great town hall on the punches to knock down democratic socialism. And as we are talking with our kids and our friends and our family, if we have our brains around these issues and can speak to the issues calmly, and knowledge, then we can really engage in this battle of ideas. So join us. It's a $20 cover charge to get in. Chef D, I know, is putting together some great menu that you can choose from, and you go ahead and then just buy whatever you want to eat and drink. And that is on Monday night. So go to my website, kimmunson.com, and you can click on the link there and get signed up for that. And last night, call me crazy, Jason. So we do Stanford, Colorado yesterday. And then it was the night the girls came over. So we had about 30 women at my house.
Boy, you had a long day, didn't you?
It was a long day.
Yeah.
I won't even tell you what time I started yesterday morning. But with that, because it was a long day, and another one of my valued sponsors is Hooters Restaurants, and that's a real freedom story as well regarding them being able to compete in the free market. So they are valued partners. But I didn't want to cook, and so I just had delivered to my front door some delicious wings as well as their buffalo shrimp. And so this weekend we've got the NFL playoffs. You know, the Avs and the Nuggets are making a run at run at it as well. And then next Monday night is the 2020 College Football Playoff National Championship. And Steve said it's also being referred to as the Tiger Bowl. Now, I don't know if that's politically correct because they're leaving out lions and elephants and whatever. Do you think that's politically
correct?
Well,
and don't forget domesticated cats as well.
True, true. And with the movie Cats coming out, you know. But anyway. And Tigers and Bears. But both teams, LSU and Clemson, are the Tigers. And so they're calling it the Tigers Bowl. And that is next Monday night. So if you don't want to cook, You know, you could go over to Hooters. They have all these great televisions, or you can have something delivered to your front door, or you can drop by and take it home. So more information, go to my website, KimMunson.com, and all my sponsors are there, and you can click on that and get more information. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Representative Dave Williams is on the line, and he is a real champion. He's a guy that really stands up for freedom, and it was great to actually acknowledge him from the, well, the stage or the steps, if you will, yesterday. We acknowledged a number of legislators who last legislative session stood for freedom, and we've got 120 days coming up here, and these folks need our support and need to know that we're there. We're out there working. Sometimes it's hard to get down to the Capitol, and I think it was just a really good show of support for them as they got ready for this battle. And Dave Williams, he showed up, and we're going to find out what he is introducing this legislative session. This is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And you can sign up for our salon series on Monday night at Water's Edge Winery, The Punches to Knock Back Democratic Socialism. And one of those people that's knocking back democratic socialism is Representative Dave Williams. Representative Williams, it's great to have you on the show.
Yes, thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. And thank you for being at Stand for Colorado yesterday.
Oh, yeah, you bet. That was a great rally. I'm glad that you helped put that on and get a lot of good liberty-loving, freedom-loving people together to let, you know, the Democrats know that we can't be pushed around.
Well, it was really important. And also, I think a show to you and your colleagues that are standing for freedom down at the state capitol, that there are people that are there that really care. And, Dave, we had somebody said they counted there were about 500 people there. And I would really venture to say that for every person that was there, there were 10 others that wanted to be there. I had so many folks say, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock on a Wednesday morning for, you know, I can't get down there, or, you know, I need to work. I get that. But I was really, really impressed. But you had a town hall then after the rally, and I was still breaking down and doing a whole bunch of things, so I was not able to come in. What was that all about, Representative Williams?
Sure. Thanks for asking. We had a town hall to talk about one of the bills that I had worked on with two wonderful gals who want to ensure that the government doesn't force vaccination mandates. And I worked with Pam Long and Colleen Elaine, and they're with the Medical Autonomy Coalition and the Colorado Health Choice Alliance, and we're introducing a consumer protection bill of sorts to ensure that, you know, there's full disclosures about the risks and the benefits of vaccines, and that people can't be treated differently or discriminated against if they choose to delay or decline vaccinations altogether. If you're pro-vaccine, it's great. It's all good. If you're against it, that's fine, too. We just don't want the government forcing us into that position.
Well, again, you know, we talk about that on the show, that if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force it. And I read the bill that was introduced last year. Now, was that 1312? I'm trying to think if that's what it was. But that was the forced vaccination bill. And first of all, I used to think it was above my pay grade to actually read the legislation. You can go to the state website. You can download what's being proposed, and you can read it. And certainly there's a lot of legalese stuff in there, but you can start to understand what's really being passed. And when I looked at that bill, Representative Williams, I saw real danger, because what it looked to me like what would happen is it was giving an unelected bureaucratic group sometime in the future that they could mandate things that may have not even been invented yet, and would mandate that people would have to inject that into their bodies. And I saw great danger in that, and that is why I became very concerned about that particular bill, 1312.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there are not only health risks associated with this, and if you don't believe me, feel free to reach out, you know, to a lot of the, people that have unfortunately experienced, complications or injuries for their children because they vaccinated. But beyond that, I mean, it's just a violation of our rights. With 1312, it potentially was going to violate religious freedom. You know, people who have conscious objections to vaccinating their children, it would have violated that. It also would have violated our rights to privacy with the tracking system. That's a big deal. And as you and I both know, historically, we don't want the government putting us in a registry or a tracking system. So, you know, this isn't just about, you know, health risks. It's also about our fundamental freedoms to not be harassed or discriminated against or tracked by the government. And that, by the way, the legislation is coming back again. The Democrats want to force this one more time. And during the town hall, I committed to, hundreds of folks in that room that if they try this stuff, then, you know, I'm going to go ahead and shut the Capitol down. We'll just engage in a good old-fashioned filibuster.
Well, and Dave, let's talk about this, though. I vaccinated my kids, and I received my vaccinations, and it made sense to me with those particular things, although the recommended list from the CDC has expanded significantly. And one of the things that I've been concerned about is this HPV, the Gardasil vaccination, which that is to vaccinate against HPV, which is my understanding is a sexually transmitted disease. I'm now hearing people say, oh, no, it's not. And I reached out to some of my folks that know, and they said, yes, that is sexually transmitted. So what we see here, and in New York right now, there's legislation that's being proposed that every seventh grader would have to be vaccinated with this before they could go to school. And so what I see is this potential for these kinds of overreach with our children under the guise of, quote unquote, protecting them. And so I see something that I think vaccinations are a good idea. But what I see with radical activists is they take things that we think are a good idea. And I'm not for forced vaccinations, but I think vaccinations are a good idea. But they take that and then they morph it into something where they can use it for power and control. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. Your comments on that, Dave.
Sure. I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. In my bill, the beauty of it is it's your choice. If you want to vaccinate your kid, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. And I love how you brought in the free market to this. We all have smartphones, and the government didn't have to tell us to buy it. We just felt that it was a benefit to us in our lives, and we went out and we purchased it and we got it. It should be no different with vaccinations. Let the free market handle it. If people want to do it, great. And vaccination rates should be able to increase through that kind of system, provided that people. But I definitely agree with you that this is about power and control. I don't quite understand all the angles behind it, but at the end of the day, I think this is a group that has been marginalized historically, who don't agree with vaccinations. And I think this is maybe low hanging fruit for the Democrats. And at the end of the day, we need to protect them as well as everyone else to live the lives that they choose to live.
Well, and Representative Williams, that was the theme yesterday: is freedom versus force. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people. And so informed consent, people being able to understand you know, what it is that's being proposed, having a conversation with the doctor explaining benefits and risks, and parents being able to make that choice is very important. And again, I look at the players, and when I look at the players who are really forcing this, I see other arenas where they don't really care about children. And so I expect for people to be consistent across the board on whether or not they care about kids and their health and their well-being. And I could give a couple of examples. One of them is spending. They love spending other people's money. And one of the people's money they're spending is our children's. And our kids don't even have a voice about that. And so these are not folks that I see really are caring about children as you look at their actions. And so once again, it raises, no pun intended, a red flag to me that what is the real purpose here? And what I see is power and control. And that is the opposite of freedom. And we are freedom people, and we need to stand for freedom. So Representative Williams, one other thing. Susan Kochevar had texted me and said that that there were 148 bills that were read across the desk yesterday. How on earth did that happen? First day? Huh.
Yeah, well, that's kind of par for the course of the Capitol. Everyone has deadlines. We each get five bills at the very least, and that's normal for the Capitol. Protect your wallet, protect everything now because the session is started, and we got 120 days before we get a reprieve.
Well, and I really appreciate you being there, and I just got a text message from Katie, and she said, thank goodness for Representative Dave. So, Dave Williams, thank you so much. Thank you for being at the rally yesterday, and thank you for standing for freedom and standing against force. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. You bet. Take care.
Okay. Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. In studio with me is Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. And we're going to be talking about a couple of things. One is we've just started the new year. And what does that mean exactly? And then next, this piece that was in CNBC, it was on January 2nd, regarding I felt that it was somewhat jaded might be the word, and I wanted to see what you had to think about it. And it was an article. It says, these six charts compare the U.S. and China economies in the second year of their trade war. And so this is Kim Munson. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Jason McBride.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure to check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And be sure and sign up for our first salon series Monday night at Water's Edge Winery with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. And when the kids come home from school, you need to be able to chat with them because they are in some places being indoctrinated to socialism that it is good, and we need to explain why we need to knock that down. So, Jason McBride.
Yes.
Great to have you here. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you as well.
You know, we've had a lot of fun looking at a variety of things, and you always do a lot of research, and you had looked at kind of three different market indicators regarding stocks. And so let's jump in here. The first one was regarding that some say that if the first day of the trading year is up, then the markets have a better chance of being up for the year. What do you think?
Well, I think these indicators are good, whether it's this one or the others we talk about, Kim. If they have some historical precedence or a pattern, well, then maybe it gives you a little bit of help on how to invest for the year. It doesn't mean you change everything, but maybe you get a little bit more aggressive for some years or dial it back for other years. And I think these can give you somewhat of a clue. But okay. We'll talk about three of them today. This first one, the first trading day of the year, honestly, I had never heard of that one before until a couple of years ago. And there was an article I read that was really touting this, saying if the first trading day of the year is up, then the odds are better that the market is going to be up for the whole year. But in the article, they didn't give any statistics or data. It was just a lot of fluff. So I went back, Kim, all the way to 1963.
Okay.
So we got about 50-plus years of data here. And I can tell you that the first day of the year over the last 56 years, about half the time it's up, half the time it's down.
Okay.
But there isn't any correlation that I could find that the market does better in the years when the first day is up versus the years when the first day is down. The only data point that I could dig out of this, and this is really reaching, believe me, is that if the market is up 1% or more on the first day of the year, then the chance of seeing a big down for the year is pretty slim. Hmm. And I define that because in every year that the market was up over 1% on the first day, we've only had one year where it was down significantly, and it was down about 6.5%.
Okay.
So take that with a grain of salt, and you know what? It doesn't matter this year anyway because we are only up 0.84 the first day.
Okay, so never mind on that one.
Never mind on that one.
What about the next one?
Well, the next one we talked about a little bit on the air. This is what they call the Santa Claus rally, and this is kind of an indicator. If it occurs, it doesn't mean much. But what you're watching for is the years when it doesn't occur. So the old adage is this, Kim, if Santa Claus should fail to call, the bears may come to broaden wall. So the Santa Claus rally is defined as this. If the market is up, you look at the last five trading days of 2019 and the first two trading days of this year. So it's a seven-day period. That's called the Santa Claus rally. So the adage says if we're down over that seven-day period, it may precede a bear market or a drop in stock prices. And this one, quite frankly, is a little bit tough as well. Going back to 1950, that rally has failed to occur 12 times.
Okay.
So what happened? Well, twice we had bear markets, 2000 and 2008. And those were, ugly, obviously. The other 10 times, three times we had the market just went up, and so the indicator meant nothing. Three times we did get a dip early in the year where if you'd have bought it, then played the bounce, you made good money. Four times, not much happened, boring market. So 10 out of 12 times, Kim, you'd have been just fine ignoring this signal. Two of the 12 times, when the market didn't rally, you'd have got badly hurt if you didn't pay attention. But the coincidence is both of those were in pre-election years.
Interesting.
So, I don't know if two occurrences is enough to make a data set, but the history shows if we fail to get that rally, before a pre-election year, then the market might be pretty rough, or actually in a pre-election year. So if we fail to get the rally in the election year might be rough for the market.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sure everybody out there has that down exactly perfectly,
right? I think I've got it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there.
Just mentioning Santa Claus, I wanted to mention, we did a show on your Santa stocks.
Yes.
And you can go to my website and then go to sponsors and click on that. And you've got your list of Santa stocks. And so it's really fun and really interesting. And I would recommend people go take a look at that. That's pretty cool.
Well, I appreciate it. We do the turkey stocks and the Santa stocks every year. And this year we tried to make a nice report people could download, and Zach did a great job on that.
Uh-huh. Get your free copy. Just click right there. So, okay.
So the Santa Claus, let me finish real quick, Kim. Did it happen this year? Yes, it did. Over those 7 days, the market was up 0.03%. So it wasn't up very much, but we did get the Santa Claus rally. So, again, this one happened, so there's really not much to discern from that one this year.
Okay.
That's more of a negative one.
Okay.
So let's go to our next one, which this one, now, this one I think has a bit more meat on the bones. This is a study that says if the market is up after the first five trading days of the year, then it has a good chance of being up for the year. Now, this one, I think, has some credence to it. If you go all the way back to 1950, out of the 44 years that the market was up in the first 5 days, only four of those years resulted in significant losses. Wow. So if you look at the data, you know, and you calculate it out, you know, you could say there's a 91% chance of not getting your rear end kicked in the market if the first 5 days are up. So if you buy at the end of the first 5 days, or you're already in and you just stay invested for the year, you've got a pretty good chance of at least not getting hurt badly. Now, Kim, if the first 5 days are down, I think there's been 14 occurrences of that over the last since 1950. It really doesn't help. It's a 50-50 proposition, what happens in the market for the year. So, again, you combine these. The first trading day is almost a farce.
Okay.
Did we get the Santa Claus rally? Well, it's not good or bad, but it's better to get it than not. And then the first five trading days are up. You start to develop a pattern where you could say, okay, well, maybe this year you know, things, the odds are a little bit better, at least, that I won't get killed. So for 2020, the first five trading days were up 0.69%.
Okay.
So that's a positive indicator.
Okay.
So, of course, none of these are guaranteed to work. There's always things that happen. But, you know, sometimes you got to just look at probabilities and history and add it to your information package and your decision-making process.
Okay. And, you know, Jason, everybody is different.
Yes.
Everybody has different risk tolerances. They have different goals. There's just everybody is different. And I think from this last election that we had, when we looked at Proposition CC, you know, which that was the request from the PBIs,
mm-hmm.
that they would be able to keep our taper tax refunds forever. The people of Colorado said, keep your hands off my wallet. Even though many times they are voting to put people in down at the state house or at their county commissioner's level or, you know, at their city councils, they're putting in people that want to get into their wallet. I think ultimately people are very concerned about their own personal economic well-being.
Well, I would agree with that. And I also think you and I have talked about this, Kim. I think sometimes, for some reason, these folks think that they're going to be excluded from the bad
right.
part of it when they vote these folks in. And as far as I know, I don't think they're keeping a list of everybody that voted for them, and they say, okay, they're exempt from us getting in their pocket. I don't know if you guys talked about the story. It was interesting that, you know, they're still messing with Tabor. I mean, I'm still don't quite have my head around it, but apparently we're getting a retroactive tax cut for 2019. On Colorado state tax, it's 4.63
okay.
normally
on income tax. Okay.
This year, it's so for 2019. Now they're just going to charge 4.5%. And as far as I can read it, there won't be Tabor refunds. They're just doing it in the way of giving us a lower tax rate.
Okay.
So instead of taking it out of our pocket and then giving it back, they're just not going to take it out of our pocket in the first place.
I like that.
But I thought the article was interesting. Jared Polis was trying to pose that as, look, I gave you a tax cut. Well, no, it was Tabor rules that caused that to happen. It was automatic.
Well, and I hear rumblings that Jared Polis, what they may be trying to do, that there's going to be another run at Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights this year, to try to get rid of it. That another thing they'll be talking about is a tiered tax rate, income tax rate. And we actually have, it's called a progressive, There's nothing progressive about penalizing people who work hard and do better. But that's what a progressive income tax or a tiered income tax rate does. And we have a flat rate across the state of Colorado. And I think it was 4.63%. You said it's probably going to be 4.5% this year.
No, last year.
Oh, last year.
Yeah, it's weird. It's retroactive. Sorry, Kim. Okay. Didn't mean to correct you.
Oh, no, do. Because we do like to try to get the facts right. That's an important thing. But so what may be coming down, what may be proposed is that if you make above a certain amount, then you would pay a higher percentage of your income. And if you make even more, a higher percentage. So Susan Kochevar, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and she said, so we encourage our kids to go out, maybe go to college, go out and get that good job, work hard, do all those extra things, or not go to college, start your own business. And the more successful you are, the government says, then we want a bigger percentage of that pie. And that is so antithetical to the American idea. So let's just think about it. You've got Bernie and all these folks out there going, billionaires and millionaires. And, he's a millionaire.
Bernie's a millionaire, by the way.
Yeah. And how did he do that working in government all this? I can't quite figure that one out. Can
I
you?
Think we were in the wrong business. Well, now, Kim, you were in the government for a while. You're city council. I mean, you probably came out of there with, what, 5-10 mil?
Yeah, we had a stipend of about $800 a month.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, and I bet I worked 40 hours plus a week just on that. And then I had my other job as well. But so what they say is that they want to take a bigger percentage of your income. But let's think about it. If you make $100,000, and so we'll use the tax rate of 4.5%, then you would pay $4,500, right? So, but if you made $1 million, you would pay $45,000. So why should you have to pay a disproportionate higher amount of your income? You're already kicking in 10 times more than the other person.
Yeah, it is a quandary. Folks have, pushed for the flat tax on a federal level as well. The issue with that is that, as we know, 90% of all the tax revenue or some number like that comes from the highest earners.
Right.
What would the flat tax rate have to be for them to continue to get the same amount of revenue coming in across the whole spectrum? I say sometimes be careful what you wish for, because if you go to a flat tax, that rate that the lower end is paying may have to come up substantially to equalize, the flat tax they're not getting from the higher end anymore.
Well, let's save that for another day.
Okay, that's fine.
Because I really like the idea of everybody having some skin in the game.
I do too.
And we'll talk about that. We're going to run out of time here because I want to ask you about this piece from CNBC. Says the 6 charts comparing the U.S. and China economies in the second year of their trade war. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jason McBride, I want to see what you came up with in this. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out my website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And be sure and sign up for our salon series on Monday night. It's going to be at Water's Edge Winery, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism by Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. It's going to be a really good event, so be sure and sign up there. Jason McBride. I saw this. This was January 2nd, CNBC. It says these 6 charts compare the U.S. and China economies in the second year of their trade war. And so I took a look at, where did they get the information for each of these charts? And it started to seem somewhat suspect to me. And I thought, let's ask you about this when you're in the studio. So what was your takeaways on this piece?
Well, I think, you know, the piece was somewhat jaded to try to make it appear as if, you know, America was being damaged more by the trade war and China was doing just fine, so to speak. You know, I thought, well, the author of the article was Yen Ni Lee.
Uh-huh.
Yenny Lee. Is that a joke or is that the real name?
I don't know.
I'm not quite sure. But I thought that's a total by the side. You know, it's interesting, and maybe, you know, I'm seeing things where they're not there, but maybe I'm not too. I mean, the very first photograph they show in the article is of the Chinese and American flags. And, of course, they've got the Chinese flag out in front of ours, kind of half-blocking the American flag, as if ours is, you know, theirs is out front, theirs is stronger, theirs is better, and we're in the background.
It's a very subtle optic. So, well, good catch on that.
And Okay. Maybe I'm imagining things and there wasn't anything to it, but I thought I'd mention it. So,
with this group, I don't trust them.
Well, I don't either. That's why I mentioned it,
okay.
Kim. So the first... you know, chart they used, it's a chart comparing GDP of both countries, basically, and that one goes back 2 years. They show 2 years worth of GDP. You could see that China's GDP back in the first quarter of 2018 was 6.8%. That means their output, their total economic output went up by 6.8%. You know, as the trade war ground on, in the third quarter of 2019, the latest report, their GDP had fallen to about 6% even.
Okay.
So if you look at the numbers, I mean, China's just kind of declined steadily. Now, the U.S. GDP is lower. I mean, our GDP isn't at 6 or 7%, and you wouldn't expect it to be. China's GDP is expected to be larger. We're a fully developed country. Much of China is still in the process of converting from third world status to, you know, lower middle class status. While we're very developed, we're not going to see that kind of growth on a normal basis. Now, I would mention that most of America is fully developed. Los Angeles and San Francisco are in the process of de-evolving back into third world type places at this point. So that may hurt our GDP going forward. But our GDP in the first quarter of 2018 was 2.5, and ours bounces up and down each quarter. I mean, 2.5, 3.5, 2.9. You know, we kind of had a flat quarter at the end of 18. This year, our GDP's been between 2 to 3.1%, but the fourth quarter's not included. And generally, you know, with Christmas, that type of thing, and retail sales, you would think our fourth quarter GDP should be pretty good. I know those that are out there are fervently praying that we have a terrible fourth quarter.
The radical activists.
But I think the whole point of this chart, I mean, it's 2 years worth of data, but isn't it nice just to be able to put these colored bars on there where China's bars are so much taller than ours?
Well, and I have to tell you, I'm not sure I even really trust the numbers. They have only two sources for this. One was the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. The other was the National Bureau of Statistics of China. I'm not sure that I totally trust that. So.
Well, yeah, and I was going to make that point that... you know, it does seem when you go to the National Bureau of Statistics of China and you look, the numbers are there. But boy, that is just, you know, how does a country have just that, you know, it's almost the same every quarter. You don't get the fluctuations up and down. You know, again, if they're fudging the numbers, I don't know. But I think that, you know, the visual of this chart was just intended to make it look like China is much, much bigger than we are.
Agreed.
Which is not the case at all.
Agreed.
So we've got the second chart. Now, this one I found interesting, and you've got to watch the, you know, the language in their commentary as well. This is basically U.S. exports and imports and China exports and imports. So it's the trade balance or imbalance. Well, again, these numbers, exports and imports from the U.S., went down a small amount. Compared, 2019 was a tiny bit lower than 2018. It was the same thing with China, though. Their exports and imports also came down. But the interesting part was our trade imbalance with China shrank by about $50 billion. So what happened was our overall trade imbalance was mostly unchanged. We still imported a heck of a lot more than we exported as a country, Kim. But our imbalance with China shrank by $50 billion. So we did more trade with other countries and less trade with China in 2019 than we did in 2018. And I think that's part of what our president is trying to do, is open up better trade deals with other countries. But the vernacular of it, you have to watch. Our deficit with China shrank by $50 billion, but they have a chart on their chart here, the little yellow block that indicates that it's reversed. The yellow block, and I know you guys can't see it, but there's a yellow block and a blue block that shows the trade imbalance with China. Well, the yellow one should be smaller because our trade imbalance with them shrank, but for some reason it's bigger.
Interesting.
So, again, I know it's hard to do this on radio without the visuals, but it's like, okay, somebody either made a mistake or they purposely just left it that way once again to try to make it look like, quote, China is better than we are.
So we've had three optics now that maybe it's just coincidence and maybe it's not, but they're not correct on some of these things. Okay, next one, manufacturing sector.
Yeah, I can't gripe too much about the chart they used. I mean, it's actually correct if you look at it on a one-year basis. There's been a lot of hand-wringing and ballyhoo about some contraction in our manufacturing sector, what's called the Purchasing Managers Index, which dropped below 50 back in August. And any reading below 50 shows contraction in the manufacturing sector. It's not necessarily a predecessor to a recession or anything, but the media immediately seized on that, and they're saying that, basically the country's going down the tubes, and I don't think that's the case. Now, China's manufacturing just kind of went sideways over the last year, but there's more of a story to it, Kim. If you look longer term at what has happened to manufacturing since Trump got elected, well, our manufacturing index after the election shot way up. I mean, it was down in the low 50s, like 51, 52. It shot all the way up over 60 after the election. And then recently it has started to contract to some degree. But you have to realize that we had this big explosion in manufacturing activity that got added to the economy. That's added a lot of jobs, a lot of money to the economy. And yeah, we're slowing down a little bit from that high level, but we're not slowing down from a level that we were already at. So things haven't gotten worse since the election. Now, China, theirs didn't do anything. Once Trump got elected, their manufacturing actually took a big dip. It went sideways. It took another large drop at the end of 2018, the beginning of 2019. Actually got down to about the 48 level, which is contraction as well, and now it has bounced back up to some degree.
Okay.
So these things do fluctuate back and forth. So retail sales, I guess we're about to run out of time. Boy, this took longer than I thought.
Good information, really good information.
Both countries' retail sales have been, for the most part, somewhat flattish over the last year. China's retail sales numbers are on a relative basis. They're growing faster than ours. And of course, again, you've got a population where a lot of them are, living in third world conditions. They're moving up a little bit. Maybe now they're getting a cell phone or a TV, and that contributes to retail sales. And as far as the currency movements, That was a chart showing that the dollar kind of went sideways while the Chinese currency went down. Well, yeah, absolutely, that happened. But again, the vernacular of the article says that China allowed the yuan to depreciate most of the year, and then they say that move attracted accusations of currency manipulation from U.S. President Donald Trump. Well, it attracted accusations of currency manipulation from a lot of other observers around the world as well, but the article only attributes it to Trump.
Of course.
Now, the International Monetary Fund, which is a whole bunch of members that, as we know, think America is really great, and they love the president. I hope you can detect my sarcasm. They disagree and said the value of the yuan was in line with China's economic fundamentals. If China lets her currency devalue and our currency gets stronger, it makes our imports to them more expensive and their imports to us less expensive.
Okay.
It's just that simple. So, yeah, I think the article didn't have bad numbers, so to speak, but I think the way they chose to present the data purposely, the time periods they used on the charts tried to make China look better than the U.S.
Okay, and then the last one, stock market performance. The U.S. stock market has done much better than the Chinese stock market, and that is something that would be very easy to research.
Well, it is, and a short-term chart doesn't tell the story. Since the start of the trade war, as they call it, China's market's down 15% and ours is up 13%. Clear winner.
There you have it. Jason McBride, thank you for your research on this, and thanks for being in studio. You and your colleagues, Presidential Wealth Management, I'd recommend that people reach out to you at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboards, and I know that you would love to sit down with our listeners and help them out.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kim.
So thank you for being here. Our quote for today, the seeds of discouragement cannot take root in a grateful heart. That's by Don Pasco. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.